Hello, this is your host, Sonata Allison, and welcome back to the Parallel Podcast, where we talk about sexuality as it should be. Hello, hope everybody's having a good day today. I was really looking forward to doing this episode. You guys are probably looking at like sexual compatibility while abstaining. How are we gonna know that if we're not having sex, we're abstaining? I get it. I get the confusion. And this is why I wanted to do this episode. So like I say later on in the episode, I saw a TikTok that Luke did where he talks about how we can see things in people that we are dating or want to be with. And these things can be cues to us knowing that we may be sexually compatible to them, or just that a person is that might be able to be pretty decent at sex. So y'all might be thinking like, why do I need to know this? If we're getting married, I'm going to marry them anyways, so that shouldn't matter. And to a certain extent, okay, yes. But just like finances, just like spirituality, it's important to have these kinds of conversations or look for different things in a person that you observe that maybe even sometimes you may not talk about. But similar to not waiting to get married to talk about someone's like 50K debt, that they haven't dealt with, there are things that sexually you might need to talk about to know, like, are we actually compatible? Is this something I can deal with? And maybe not getting married, but maybe giving the person time to work on something before getting married to help your married life be easier. For example, if someone is very uncomfortable with sexuality in general, that is for sure going to affect your sex in marriage. And that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be with them, but they have to get more comfortable with sexuality because that can affect your marriage. So it's really just being able to look at your marriage and see, like, either this is a thing that's going to make our marriage a little harder and us being prepared for that, or seeing that this is a thing that can be worked on before marriage. So I hope that's helpful for you guys to see. And I think as you listen to the episode, you will see that. And I do want to just shout out an episode that I did in the past. I believe it's episode 79, if I'm correct. Yes. So episode 79 is called Go Have Good Sex. And it talks about even like having maybe even a sex journal before you get married, or I talk about in the episode, I think, like the red light, green light, yellow light, where you're kind of talking about what are some things I think that I'm not going to be comfortable with, knowing that the list may change, where maybe things that are green lights right now that you think you'll enjoy are become red lights, or they become yellow lights. So it's important to have these conversations before getting married, not just waiting and then dealing with it as it comes, just like finances, spirituality, different things like that. So really hope you guys enjoy this episode with Luke. So let's get right into it. How are you doing today?
Great. Good to be here, Sonata. Thank you.
Of course. So before we start, I want the people to know who you are. So who are you and what do you do?
My name's Luke Hastings. I go by Narrow Way Man on Instagram. That's pretty much the only place I am right now, other than my podcast, The Path. And what I do is help men, Christian men specifically, with confidence, motivation, relationships, identity, that sort of thing. So I'm a men's coach. It usually is triggered by relational issues, and it usually centers in on identity issues.
Okay, good stuff. So important. You're doing the Lord's work out here. The men need that. So I'm glad that
we do.
Yes, I'm glad that you agree. Okay, so when I have someone on the podcast for the first time, I ask them this question, and it is, what is something you believe to be true about God and why? One thing.
One thing I believe to be true about God is He is the source of all truth. And then why? Because I think that makes the most sense when I look at the laws of the universe and science and universally understood moral codes. I have to infer that was all established by a being outside of our system. Mm-hmm. And I've identified the Judeo-Christian God as that being. So that's also, as a side note, what I believe to be the core value of masculinity is truth. And so there's a lot of things I believe about God, but since you asked for one, I'll lead with that one.
Okay, wait, now I have questions. What? So tell me why you think that's a core to masculinity.
So I think masculinity, and first of all, masculinity is not manhood per se or manliness. Those are similar, but different. And I think increasingly different in our culture today in the West. Mm-hmm. Females can be masculine as well. Males can be feminine as well. You see it with gay couples and lesbian couples. There's always a more masculine player and always a more feminine player. Mm-hmm. However, by God's design, men are supposed to be a bit more masculine generally, and women supposed to be a bit more feminine generally. And I would say the foundational truth or the foundational value for masculinity is truth, because a masculine man must be grounded. He must mm-hmm. be stable. He must be an anchor. And to be grounded and stable and an anchor in times of stress and trouble and difficulty for those around him, he needs to be anchored in something immovable and unshakable. Mm. And that would be truth, ideally. That's going to be the most immovable and unshakable thing.
Wow, that's pretty, yeah, that's really good. And I definitely agree that is a need as a woman. So that's really good. So I have kind of a random question I just have been wanting to ask a guy that kind of just popped into my head, and then we'll actually get into why you're here.
Cool.
But the question is, do you feel like there are so many sexually active Christian men because they are afraid of the pressure to like know what they're doing in the bedroom before, you know, engaging?
Do you mean, are they
like premarital?
Right. So are you asking if there's a fear of not knowing what you're doing once married, so you have to figure it out beforehand?
Yes.
I personally wouldn't say that. Okay. That may have to do with their disproportionate preference for virgins.
Okay.
But I don't think that a Christian man who is thinking about marriage is engaging in sexual activity because he doesn't want to mess things up once married. I think he's engaging in it because he's not in control of his sex drive.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah. I was trying to find an out for them, you know, but
it all comes back to self-control. Yeah, unfortunately, no. Yeah, it really does. I mean, I've worked with guys who have, you know, they've doubled up and they've decided, you know, I'm not going to engage in it. And then they end up doing it anyways, and we talk about it later, and it's because they just didn't have control over their sex drive. There's men that I know in my personal life that have, you know, had premarital sex with a girl they thought were going to marry. That didn't work out. They didn't get married, and then they swore they would never do that again, and then they've fallen into it again with another girl. So it's not, I mean, they might pretend like that's a justification. Mm. You know, like, oh yeah, well, I want to know what I'm doing. That's not the real reason, right? That's like it's not you, it's me type of reason. Like, it's not the real reason, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm assuming you don't ascribe to the try before you buy rhetoric that people are saying out here.
I do not. I do not. That's not necessarily because it's not what my flesh wants, but it's because I'm trying to submit to God.
Mm-hmm. That's really good. So I think that's a good segue into our conversation today, because I saw your TikTok, as you know, and I was like, wow, people don't really talk about sexual compatibility for people before they get married, like how to see that there might be compatibility. So how do you think Christians can know if they're sexually compatible? I know you kind of listed five ways. Like, let's jump into that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a tough topic, right? Because nobody wants to give the Christians any sort of guidance on how to assess those things before marriage. It's always just like, well, don't do it. Don't think about it. Don't talk about it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, avoid, avoid, avoid. Mm-hmm. And that's not always very helpful, right? So, yeah, the biggest thing I would say on all of that is topic we were on at the very beginning, which is masculine versus feminine. Mm. Again, in any couple, so let me say this very carefully, in any couple that has mutual romantic attraction, and not all of them do, right? Some couples out there are just kind of friends. They're kind of roommates. Maybe they did have mutual attraction at one point, but that's faded. For any couple that does have mutual attraction, there is a masculine player and a feminine player. And it can be for gay couples, lesbian couples, heterosexual couples, all couples. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a more masculine player, more feminine player. This has nothing to do with, are they physically hot? Are they physically attractive? This is a different thing. And that's a hard thing for a lot of my guys to understand. It's because as men, when we're on dating apps or we're on the internet or we're just out and about, we are very simple creatures. We see a woman, we think she's attractive, and we think that that's all we need to know. Mm. Women are a little bit smarter with that. They will see a guy and be like, oh yeah, he's cute, but then they won't really start to develop as much as we do until they have an interaction or two with him. Mm. I've heard women say multiple times, like, oh, it doesn't matter what he looks like. I need to like talk to him first to see if I'm actually attracted. I need to see how he behaves, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, good for y'all women for being smarter than us with that. But that all to say, this is not physical attractiveness. This is masculine energy versus feminine energy. And what I've had clients run into is they'll have a very physically beautiful woman that they're excited to meet up with. And in some cases, unfortunately, they'll end up having sex with her. And this will be kind of, as we're talking about their past, and they'll tell me, yeah, you know, she's really pretty and I had sex with her, it didn't work out. And they would report that the sex wasn't very good. And we would talk about it. And I pointed out, hey, out of all of these women that you've dated in your past, she was the most masculine woman. Mm. And because we would talk about, you know, her mannerisms, what she liked, the things she did. And that has that dynamic chemistry that you see in the, like, the love story, the movies, the rom-coms, those kinds of things, that chemistry doesn't come from physical attractiveness. It comes from masculine energy versus feminine energy. And that chemistry transfers to the bedroom as well. It permeates everything. Mm-hmm. Another misconception with that is opposites attract, right? We all heard opposites attract. That's true from a friendship perspective. Like, maybe an introvert attracts an extrovert, or maybe a, you know, a more nerdy person attracts a more athletic person or whatever. Mm-hmm. Maybe as friends, there's some polarity there, but the actual sexual romantic chemistry comes from masculine versus feminine. And that can be two introverts together. It can be two extroverts together.
Okay. Yeah. And I'm kind of wondering too, like, do you feel like the climate of like society and how like there's like a war against masculine and feminine, and like, do you think that's affecting like even men's masculinity and how they approach women or anything like that?
100%. Yeah. Men, basically, if you think about everything that's being encouraged for women empowerment, boss babe culture, objectifying your body and calling it girl power, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. If you put all of those attributes that society is encouraging women to do in a bucket, you could label that bucket toxic masculinity if men were doing those same things.
That is true. Wow.
It's a complete reversal of what God designed. And of course, society would point to the bad actors of masculinity and show all of the ways that men get it wrong, because men do get it wrong. Men do have toxic elements to their masculinity at times. I'll be the first to admit that. But the underlying elements of it are being flipped, and men are being encouraged to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Like, yeah, it's bad for you to abuse power, but men are being asked to not only stop abusing power, but to just get rid of their power. Mm-hmm. To not be, not only be avoid over aggression, but to not be aggressive at all. you know, whereas women are like, let's just do more of all those things.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like even lately with dating, like, I don't know, it's like men want to be with, they want to be taken care of more than want to take, more than they want to take care of. And it's just such an interesting change that I've noticed.
Yep. Yep. It's, and that has to do too with the modern West, just creating a bunch of soft men from our soft existence.
It's tragic. Very tragic.
It is.
But okay. What's our next one?
The next one is physical openness. So that's going to just be a little cue. If a girl is physically free and unrestricted physically with her friends and family, then that's going to be a signal that she will be the same way in the bedroom. And I would say that for guys as well to an extent, but I think girls are more transparent with that. And what I mean by that clearly is not anything sexual, but just like if she's giving hugs to her friends a lot, if she greets a friend and like wants to pat them on the shoulder and give them a side hug, and if she's cuddles with her family, you know, things like that, just wholesome things like that, but she's very open and loving and free that way, that's a good sign. If she's more stiff and rigid physically, then at least in our culture, in the Western culture, then that's going to be an indicator that she'll be stiff and rigid in the bedroom as well.
Yeah. As you were talking, it kind of reminded me, some people say like, oh, the quiet girls in church are the ones that are actually the freaks. So it's like, I guess it just, what would you say to that? Because I feel like they usually, those girls are usually portrayed to be pretty like rigid and uncomfortable in their bodies, but people portray that to be like, oh, she's probably a freak.
Yeah, I don't, that has to do, I think there's another point on that, intensity of emotion. So that one, so that's our next point. So we can kind of go into that.
Yeah.
If there's emotional dysfunction with a person, a lot of times with girls, but if there's emotional dysfunction, then that is going to make things not follow the rules, basically, right? So dysfunction, by definition, is when things don't function the way that they're supposed to function. So that general rule of physical openness, indicating openness and good flow in the bedroom, that might be overruled by emotional dysfunction. So I think the quiet girl stereotype, I mean, it's only true when it is. I don't think it's always true.
Right.
But if it is true, it's probably because of some emotional dysfunction that's being released in the bedroom, which is not necessarily a good thing.
Right.
I'm going to kind of censor a common saying, but if you get with her for the crazy sex and then the sex stops, all you have left is crazy. And a lot of times it's the stereotype, you know, and I don't have experience with this, thankfully, but the stereotype is the crazy girls are the best in the bedroom. And that is like the toxic crazy ones are the best in the bedroom. That's like well-known stereotype, especially in the red pill men's coaching space. My interpretation of that is because it's of their intensity of emotion, and not just intensity, but the dysfunctional emotions that are being sort of released and processed in the bedroom. And that's not, I mean, obviously it can make for some sparks flying encounters, but it's not the right way for those emotions to be processed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think that can apply for the repressed girl that's rigid and the church girl in the front row that's super rigid because she's suppressing things and has some dysfunction. But it can also apply to the stereotypical like toxic crazy girl as well. They both have their versions of that. But number three, intensity of emotion, it also can be a good thing too. Like if she's a passionate person in general, that will probably carry over.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say like, yeah, so I guess the healthier version of that would just be a healthy passion. What do you think would be like an example of like seeing that?
I think a girl or a guy, I'm saying girl a lot because that original post you saw was written from the perspective of a man looking for a woman. So I'm using girl a lot, but I think a lot of this applies to guys too. To answer your question for the example, if I see a girl that's high on life and excited to do whatever she's doing, an enthusiastic person, just a high level of intensity to live life, mm-hmm. then it only makes sense that that transfers to other things that I don't see.
Yeah.
That's which good. Would include sexual activity as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's probably not going to be, you know, a bump on a log in the bedroom if she's high on life everywhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? And I was just going to agree with that, right? Like that it's hard to compartmentalize usually. Like we can do our best efforts at that, but usually the way that you are carries over into every aspect of your life. So that makes sense.
Yep. How you practice is how you play.
That's a good way to say it. Okay. What's our next one?
Next one. So we did masculine, feminine polarity, physical mm-hmm. openness, intensity of emotion. Number four is body consciousness. Mm-hmm. So the stereotype, good dancers are better in bed. That's a stereotype that's been around longer than I've been alive for sure. And that stereotype rings true, not because of dance moves per se, but because of body consciousness. So something that good dancers can do is flow with their body really well, and they can match the mood of the room, the mood of the music. They can impress the crowd. They can go with the flow. And there's a very smooth connectedness between their instincts and what their body does. Mm-hmm. Good, really good athletes have this too. And really good dancers are athletes, honestly. But that's the principle, is body connectedness and consciousness. And if you're not in tune with your body, then you're not going to have that. You don't have to go learn. It's not about going and learning dance moves. It's about your consciousness, not just existing in your head. Hmm. Like a lot of people, especially, and this one I think is going to, if I had to be sexist about it, I would say this applied more to guys than girls, actually. Mm. Because I think guys suffer more from the modern white collar office jobs physically than girls do. Mm. For guys, it really suppresses a lot of our physicality to have to sit behind desks every day or not have physically strenuous jobs. And so that brings our consciousnesses more out of our bodies and into our heads. So there's jokes made about like nerdy guys and professors, or that their bodies are just means of transportation for their heads, you know?
Interesting.
Or like the STEM guys. Oh yeah. Well, I heard it and never forgot it. Cause I was like, oh yeah, that used to be me. Like it's like this Jimmy Neutron type character, you know, he's really smart and he's really quick intellectually, but his body is kind of not there. Mm. And he probably doesn't have intuition very strong. His gut reflexes, his gut feelings about things are probably pretty muted. It's just, if it's not logically making sense, he won't get it. Like he misses sarcasm a lot, that kind of thing, where you're not in tune with your body, in tune with the room. It's all of those things are kind of connected. Like a good dancer, for example, you've never met a good dancer that doesn't understand sarcasm and that's not also like decent socially, right? Mm-hmm. Like they're going to be able to, they might not be the most popular person, but they're going to be able to understand those nuances.
Yeah. So I feel like I'm hearing the guys that are listening right now. They're like, okay, if I'm not dancing, how can I get better with being more body conscious if it's not about dancing?
Yeah, you need to be doing something where you move your body in some kind of a way that requires you to lean on your instincts. So going to the gym and studying all these like proper forms for all these lifts and exercises, that helps a little bit, but that's not really it. It's more of, dancing is a good thing, and that's a great way to meet women too, like social dancing, like line dances, country two-step dances, bachata, all those kinds of things. That's a good way to meet women and get in touch with your body. But anyways, if you don't want to do that, it would probably be, you know, rec league sports, skateboarding, surfing, snowboarding, any kind of sport, probably mountain biking as well. Not so much road biking. That's just more of a pedal, 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 right? But like things that require you to actively engage your reflexes. Mm. That'll help you get in touch with your body.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I've actually done an episode 88 on dancing and like what it can create in relationship. And I was thinking too that, you know, I think dancers are good people. It kind of shows you that they listen, they can take instruction, and also that kind of that reflex thing you were talking about. They can kind of improv, and obviously that's something that's needed in the bedroom. But also, I've talked about this in past episodes as well. I think episode 70 and episode 30 about getting to know our bodies. And I talked to you a little bit about this, but just to reiterate for people who haven't heard those episodes, a lot of women are not actually in touch with their actual, like their genitalia, and men interact with theirs more often just because they use it to use the bathroom. They just see it. It's more prevalent for them. So I was actually watching this show, and she had these women kind of going through their own little cubicles. They took a mirror in there, and they actually just like got to know their bodies. And those women left feeling like, oh, you know what? Now I want to like keep her to myself. I don't want to just be giving her to anybody. And they had a more of an appreciation and also more like cohesive relationship with their body as well. So I think that's one way for women alongside dancing as well.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. I've never heard of that experiment.
Yeah. I can really cool. See if I can find that episode. It was on a reality TV show. I'll send it to you.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Perfect. So yeah, definitely. I definitely agree that that's important.
Sure.
All right. Is this our last one?
We're about to be at our last one. Yeah. So number four was body consciousness. We just talked about that. Number five is general health. And so that's a catch-all for a lot of different things. So just to be brief with that, The stereotypically, you know, flavor of the century, attractive body. Century is too broad, even. It changes probably every 20, 30 years. But that's whatever that is, that's not it. That's not what general health means. That might be the attractive body of the decade, might be a good aesthetic signal. But as far as the general health that relates to sexuality, none of those things necessarily correlate. What correlates are things like diet and energy levels and cardiovascular health and body chemistry. So diet, that's going to tie to everything really, but you are what you eat to a degree. The sexual experience is multisensual, right? There's a lot of things going on. There's a lot of fluids in there, from body odor to fluids from the sexual organs. Like a lot of different things are happening there that are affected by diet and affected by your overall health and your gut health. Like everything is contributing toward that experience. The smells, the textures, everything. The cardiovascular health, obviously some people are limited with what they can experience sexually because they run out of steam, right? Like the things that they may want to try or do or continue doing, they can't because they're just not cardiovascularly healthy, right? So that's going to be a limiter. And then of course, sleep, and there's some chronic things that people can't help as well that are still going to affect things, you know, different health issues people might have that could limit their mobility or stamina or hormonal issues as well. And of course, a lot of people would say those can be fixed by diet, but it's going to depend on the person.
Yeah, the willingness that comes back to self-control to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And as you were talking, I was thinking too, like erectile dysfunction and vaginismus, like that comes back to that to a certain extent. I think some of those things can come to like emotion. So I think that would kind of tie back into our conversation about emotional intensity, but also just emotions in general, because fear can affect both of those things, like vaginismus and also erectile dysfunction. So,
oh yeah. Making this list was hard because you could go into a lot of deeper nuances with that. For me, the fear side of it you can sense that with the physical openness a lot of times. So if you go back to number two, physical openness, a girl that's going to be sexually repressed and fearful is probably not going to also be physically open and touchy with her family and friends.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Those two probably wouldn't go together. They might sometimes, but generally speaking, they wouldn't. But yeah, you're totally right. The fear, and I think that would also fall under general health too, but like mental health, right? Like the fear, the suppression, guilt, all those things that Christians will have sometimes about sexual expression.
Yeah, that is, that right there is, that's a whole nother thing.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother thing. Do you think you would add that? Like, I don't know if how that would even work, but like,
I'm trying to make like Neanderthal simple list here, right? For guys.
Yeah. So but it's like, I mean, like, but you're right. We have room to explore that, like, right? So what would that maybe look like? Or what are some things that you didn't add to the list that you were like, these are important, but I'm trying to keep it simple.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a good one to discuss of the,
like, spirit, the spiritual environment, I guess.
I mean, that's a big one right there, because I think in the West, we've made a big mistake in that we separate spiritual from secular. I don't think that's a biblical idea. It's really a Western idea that spiritual and secular are different. You know, we have this idea of like, you know, oh, we can pray for him or we can give him medicine, you know, and it's like, God doesn't necessarily teach that the spiritual world is separate than the physical world. So yeah,
that's good.
I would say they definitely, I mean, when a demon possesses somebody, it affects them physically, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think that it's as separate as we think, but the spiritual side definitely ties into it. Yeah. That's a soapbox for another day, but the, I will say there are some women that I've dealt with either directly or indirectly through clients that you can sense that they're suppressed when they won't be, when they won't be honest about things that they should be in touch with, right? So if you can't get a young woman to, not that you should try to force this, but if you can't get a young woman to admit that a certain celebrity is attractive, that's a red flag. Like, there are some of those quiet church girls, right, that they won't admit that a certain celebrity is attractive. Or if you, it's not him, okay, let's try another one. What about him? Is he attractive? Not really. It's like, okay, one of those guys I just named, you have to think is attractive, right? Mm-hmm. Like, everybody knows that, right? They won't admit something like that. Or they won't, or maybe they won't admit things that turn them on. Or things that they're attracted to. They won't admit it to another person or to themselves. Like, those are red flags. Because, not just because she won't be good in the bedroom, but because she doesn't know herself or he doesn't know himself. And that type of person probably should be a little bit more self-realized and self-actualized before they get married, quite frankly.
Yeah, that is good. And that reminded me of something. Let me see if I can remember. Yeah, I think that happens to a lot of men for sure. When I think it's, because I've had this conversation with friends where, like, virgin women and virgin men, I feel like they approach sexuality so different. I think men are so scared, like, to even, I don't know, they have to turn their whole selves off and close themselves off to women. But women, I feel like virgin women are easier to, like, just flirt still, or, like, I don't know, touch each other. So,
yes,
that's so interesting to me.
Well, you're spot on with the men. The men, especially Christian men, I mean, to your point, virgin men who are usually going to be Christian, we actually have been taught through purity culture to be afraid of our sex drive. And so, to your point, usually our first response is, like you said, I got to shut this down. I can't acknowledge this. I can't think about this, because we know that our sex drives are very powerful and they can be dangerous as well if left unchecked. And that's been drilled into our heads through sex being taboo, through purity culture, through really no help on how to sort through these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And so we just suppress. And it turns into this dysfunctional battle of fear and suppression and shame. And yeah, we make it a lot more complicated. Whereas I think what you're saying is with women, it's just not as big of a deal. And it's more of a fun thing. Mm-hmm. And it's more of a lighthearted thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what would you like say for that guy? How would you help him out? What do you think he needs to hear?
Oh boy. that's such a big topic. Because a lot of the guys I work with are going through that right now in some shape or form. Mm. And I've been there myself, and it's often sort of a cascade of realizations that you have to have, and it takes time. And sometimes people are ready to hear different things and sometimes they're not. But if I had to be brief with it, I would say you need to bring God into all of your thoughts. He already knows them, and he already knows your motives, and he already knows motives you have that you don't even know. Mm. He knows you to the deepest parts of your soul. A lot of times we're ashamed of our thoughts and our feelings. We don't know what's what. We're like, oh, I saw a beautiful woman and I felt some kind of way. Well, was that lusting? Or, oh, I know where my eyes just went. Did I just sin? Or, you know, I had a thought about something for like 2 seconds instead of 1 second. Was that adultery? Mm. You know, and we're living in fear all the time of succumbing to those things. And so, again, we're suppressing. The truth is your sex drive is good. A lot of us as men, though, have learned only to associate the sex drive with lust. Like, we only know it, like the virgin men, right? Like, that are in their, I would say, virgin men in their late 20s and younger only understand their sex drive in the context of lust. They have not had a chance to experience that in any sort of wholesome way. It's always been something that they have to be careful about and suppress. And so what he needs to understand is your sex drive is good. It's God-given. If you see a woman and you are attracted to her, that's a good thing. That's a healthy thing. You should thank God that women are beautiful and that you're attracted to them. Like, that's good. And she is not an object for your consumption, but what men have done and what purity culture has done is we've flipped it. Instead of women being objects, like for pleasure objects, we've made them lust objects. Mm. And so instead of objectifying them as pleasure to be consumed, we've objectified them as lust to be avoided. Mm. And so they're still objects. We're not viewing them as people that are multifaceted and multidimensional. We're going to the extreme other end and we're trying to suppress our sex drive. So there's going to be times, if you're a man listening, there's going to be times where you do appreciate a beautiful woman and maybe there is some lust involved. And there's also going to be times where you don't have lust involved. And you're going to increase the times where you don't have lust involved when you're bringing God into all of your thoughts. Mm. And you're thanking him for your attraction. You're thanking him for your sex drive. You're thanking him for the beautiful woman. And you're submitting it all to him and saying, God, I'm not sure what's going on here. Here's how I feel. This is what I think. I'm giving this to you. That's what he wants. And he already knows anything that we're going to tell him. Mm-hmm. Well, so there's no secrets here. He already knows. What's healing about it is you're allowing yourself to come forward to him with it.
Yeah, that's really good. And I don't know if you've heard of Jay Stringer, who talks about unwanted sexual behavior, but really great guy. And I think his approach is very like, it's the best approach I've seen that's accountable, but also compassionate. Because we don't see that a lot, especially we see how purity culture was and the effect that it had on a lot of people. So just being able to say that, like, actually, let's be curious about our desires and also say, like, this is God given. There are even people who are in secular spaces who say at the core of self-actualization or even becoming a person is sex. Like, to be a human, it's a part of you from birth. Your body was made to have sex. So
yeah,
I think it's so important that we reiterate, like, this is a God thing and we just have to be self-controlled. And that's one of the fruit of the Spirit across the board. It's not just for sex. It's a lifestyle. So of course it's going to touch our sexuality.
Yeah,
but it's a good thing.
100%. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll double down on Jay Stringer, that book Unwanted. I guess that's his main book about it.
Yeah.
I've read it and I recommend it to any of my clients that are struggling with pornography. I recommend
awesome.
That book.
Good for you. That's awesome. Yeah. Love that guy. So I think that's a good segue to asking you, where can the people find you if they actually want to work with you?
Yeah. I'm on IG right now, Instagram at @narrowwayman. And then my podcast on Apple and Spotify is called The Path.
Perfect. Okay. Is there any last things that you want the people to hear about knowing how to be sexual compatible, masculinity, anything like that? What do you think the people need to hear?
Yeah, bottom line is you have to ask yourself this question, because I assume your audience is mostly Christian or open-minded to Christianity. Mm-hmm. You have to ask yourself this. Do I really believe that I can trust God's way over mine? Do I really believe that God has my best interest at heart? Not just a bunch of rules, not just like things that I have to submit to and sacrifice for, but truly my best interest. Because if you don't believe that he has your best interest at heart, what are you doing? What are you doing being a Christian? What are you doing following him? Mm-hmm. But a lot of times that's why we sin, right? Or why we try to do things our own way, is because we secretly, some part of us deep down inside, doesn't believe that God has our best interest at heart. So when you feel conflicted, when you're struggling, ask yourself that question. Do I really believe that God has my best interest at heart? And I hope your answer will be yes. And once you have that thought and that answer, you'll be able to move forward in a healthy way.
Yeah, that's really good. All comes down to faith at the end of the day.
Yes.
We have to believe. So thank you so much, Luke, for coming on the podcast.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure.
Of course. Yeah. So as you guys know, you can follow The Parallel at The Parallel Pod on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Remember to kiss the sun, speak the truth in love, and I'll be seeing you guys in 2 weeks. Bye.